It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Antibiotics are only useful for treating infections caused by bacteria. But every infection is different because of the combination of bacteria, the infection type, and how your unique immune system is going to respond. So scientists are trying to develop new ways to treat potentially deadly antibiotic-resistant infections. And there's this conference in Green Bay tomorrow on a global effort to develop more antibiotics. Brian Merkel is an associate professor of human biology at UW Green Bay. He's an adjunct instructor of microbiology and immunology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Brian, welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning, Kate. It's good to be with you.
So the World Health Organization calls antibiotic resistance one of the biggest threats to global health. In plain language for us, what is antibiotic resistance?
Well, antibiotic resistance is something that we've created, quite frankly. So with all the excitement that stemmed from Fleming's amazing discovery in 1928, discovering penicillin, essentially, things turned very quickly to be sour, essentially, because already by 1961, the first superbug bacterium, which is MRSA, known as MRSA, maybe many of the listeners are familiar with that one. That one tends to get a lot of press. But already a couple decades into this amazing discovery, something sinister was on the rise, and it's something that we create because when we underprescribe or overprescribe, inappropriately prescribe, whether it's human consumption of antibiotics or antibiotic use in agricultural settings, and then compounded with the reality that there are over 7 billion humans on this planet that need food and become ill, we begin to see why we have the problem that we have. And I think ultimately what we failed to consider with all the excitement, and it's kind of sad to look back and think about things this way because, you know, my father is a great example. He's someone who lived during the time where there was no such thing as antibiotics, and he also certainly lived during a time when antibiotics were discovered and there was all this excitement. And then so quickly thereafter, things changed terribly. And what we fail to consider ultimately is the biological and genetic abilities of bacteria.
So what do bacteria do? Bacteria are living. How do they become resistant to antibiotics?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so one of the things that bacteria do, which we do not have the capacity to keep up with as biological entities, is that bacteria can replicate very, very quickly. The generation time, you're looking at minutes. And the other thing that bacteria do, too, when they replicate so quickly, which gives them an opportunity to change genetically through mutations, the other thing that bacteria have the ability to do, too, is to share the genetic wealth with other bacteria in very, very impressive ways. And so one of the things that we appreciate is that once bacteria do develop this resistance, they can then share it very, very quickly and very efficiently with other bacteria.
So they can reinvent themselves very easily, it seems. Why is antibiotic resistance a worldwide health crisis?
It's a worldwide health crisis because we're getting to a point where there are infections that essentially nothing on the shelf works anymore. And so, and in many cases, but not always clearly, but in many cases, these kinds of infections that are virtually totally antibiotic resistant, caused by totally antibiotic resistant bacteria, they affect those among us that can ill afford to be infected with these things. Those of us that are the most vulnerable include those of us that have different forms of immunosuppression, the elderly, those that have different types of chronic morbidities. And so there's a great cost, too. I think that's something I would be remiss not to add when we talk about antibiotic resistance and these drugs. When we start getting into treating infections that are caused by highly antibiotic-resistant bacteria, you start looking at last resort antibiotics, and they tend to be very expensive. And I think the other thing I would add, too, is that in many cases, when you're looking at using drugs to treat those kinds of infections, it's not ideal, too, because a lot of these drugs that are last resort drugs tend to be very toxic as well.
Talking with biologist Brian Merkel, who stays with us, getting your thoughts and questions about antibiotics, 800-642-1234. What are you concerned about? Are you in healthcare? Do you want to say something about antibiotics? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll continue this conversation on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are 47 million unnecessary antibiotic prescriptions written in doctor's offices, written in ERs, hospital-based clinics in the U.S. every year. The CDC says most of these unnecessary prescriptions are for respiratory conditions most commonly caused by viruses like the common cold, like sore throats, bronchitis, which do not respond to antibiotics. We're talking about the challenges surrounding developing new antibiotics. UW Green Bay biologist Brian Merkel is our guide. You can join in 800-642-1234. How do you protect yourself from antibiotic resistance? Do you work in healthcare? What do you want people to know about antibiotics? Let's go to Alex joining us from Minocqua. Hi, Alex.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just heard you say that statistic about overprescription, but that was my question. How do you think that doctors are responding to this overprescription of antibiotics in light of we are creating all these antibiotic resistant bacteria, especially in hospitals? And how can we increase patient education? I know I have been overprescribed antibiotic for a sore throat and different things like that, and I was never told to ever finish my prescription. Which is, I think, a really, really important thing when we're talking about killing off as much bacteria and avoiding creating stronger resistant bacteria.
Alex, thanks. Let's bring in Brian. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it is a significant challenge. So I really think it comes down to communication. It comes down to education, and so that can happen in any number of ways. So I think college campuses, gen ed programs, one of the classes I teach, for example, is called Human Disease and Society, and it is populated primarily by non-majors, non-science majors. And I think it's a great opportunity to inform a population of individuals that may not know because of some lack of experience about these kinds of topics, when antibiotics should be used, how they should be used, the problem of antibiotic resistance, the drivers behind antibiotic resistance. When I talk to medical students, too, and this is happening across the country, but this is just my own personal experience that I'm happy to share, one of the things that I share with medical students is, as excited as they all tend to be about clinical things and clinical medicine, one of the things that I share with them is the importance of holding on to their understanding of basic science, their microbiology, their immunology, because it will help them communicate effectively and more effectively and explain away the many misconceptions that are out there about not just antibiotics but vaccines as well. So when there's a lack of communication between a physician and a patient, as your caller indicates, that certainly perpetuates and adds to the problem. So those kinds of things are happening more and more.
Brian, why is it so important to finish a round of antibiotics?
Because there's been a lot that goes into in terms of research and scientific study about what is the most optimal way of introducing antibiotics to bacteria in the human body. And what those studies show and ultimately lead to are the recommendations that are given to patients in terms of how they should take the antibiotics and for what length of time. And so those things are very carefully worked out. And so when we fail to complete prescriptions because, well, I feel better, you know, these are the things that are very common, right, to our human experience. A great example of this, too, when I was growing up, I remember very well being sick, being at home, and this was during the day and age in which a parent could call a physician and over the phone, sight unseen, sure, I don't think Brian needs to come in. I'll have a prescription sent in and it'll be delivered to your home.
Mm.
Those things have changed. Those kinds of behaviors and activities no longer happen because there is a world crisis problem that we have here. And so these are the kinds of things that have changed for very, very good reasons. But we know that, as your caller indicates, that many infections that historically people have been given antibiotics for are caused by viruses. And if anything, using antibiotics to treat infections caused by viruses, number one, they don't work. And if anything, it's going to delay your recovery from the infection caused by the virus because antibiotics don't work against viruses.
CDC says children under 2 and adults 65 and older still receive the most antibiotic prescriptions. We're talking with biologist Brian Merkel. He stays with us for more in this conversation and what scientists are working on to bring new antibiotics to market. That's coming up on the Ideas Network. News is next. Stay with us. The morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Lawmakers in Illinois continue to discuss a bill to limit the use of antibiotics in livestock in our neighboring state. In an effort to prevent drug-resistant bacteria in people, the CDC has warned that antibiotic resistance can be passed from livestock to people through the handling of raw foods, transmission in the water, or by caring for livestock. We're looking at the challenges with antibiotics and what researchers are doing with UW-Green Bay biologist Brian Merkel. Getting your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Did a round of antibiotics not work for you? Have antibiotics saved your life? Tell us your story. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Madeline joining us from De Pere. Madeline, hi.
Hi. First, I wanted to say when my children were, I'm 77 years old. When my children were young, there was a book called Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And I guess I would have to say Everything I Need to Know I Learned on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh, thank you, Madeline.
Well, anyway, I do hear about, you know, the antibiotics that are used in animals, and I think the government should have stopped that. But, you know, like Jesus said, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And, you know, so they could cram a whole bunch of animals together. They had to keep them alive, and they regularly fed them antibiotics. And but also, I think, you know, they act like there's nothing for viruses. Yes, there is. Unheated olive oil and elderberry juice and
Madeline. Madeline, I just want to stick with this one point about livestock and get Brian to respond to the livestock situation. What do we know about antibiotics that we give to livestock, and what instances do animals get antibiotics, and how has that created resistance?
Well, historically, in settings of agriculture, animals have been given antibiotics, whether they're sick or not, prophylaxis, right, because what that has meant is that it leads to growth promotion. So the challenge is there's a lot of, you know, there's billions and billions of people on this planet. And so, you know, it's a matter of trying to feed the population. But again, I think it's just a matter of what we have learned. And what we have learned in doing that and using antibiotics, although it leads to growth promotion, it does create problems, and it provides opportunities for bacteria to develop resistance, because when these antibiotics get inside humans because of how they're used in farms or how they used to be used in farms, the antibiotics are inside the human body at a very low concentration. And so what that means is that the bacteria that we as humans are carrying are actually being given a chance to see the antibiotic, but at a very low dose, and it gives them an opportunity to develop antibiotic resistance.
We often prescribe antibiotics to treat people with compromised immune systems already, and they're sort of the only line of defense in those cases. Are we expecting antibiotics to solve more than they realistically can?
Well, that's certainly been a part of the history, no question about it. So all of these kinds of things that are being discussed because of the question of your viewer falls under the heading of what is called antibiotic stewardship. So this is something that is being discussed in medical schools throughout our country and in other settings as well, because this is a societal problem, and we all have a vested interest in being responsible in terms of how we use these things, whether it's in an agricultural setting or whether it's a matter of human consumption for infection. So it essentially comes down to responsible use of antibiotics.
Longer hospital stays have also added to the issue of antibiotic resistance. What happens to bacteria in hospitals?
Yeah, that's fascinating. One of the things that we know is that, and this also kind of gets into, there's a connection to vaccines and being a lack of vaccination, interestingly enough, contributes to this problem, because when individuals are not getting vaccinated to certain types of infections, infectious agents that cause pneumonias, for example, because pneumonias are a big problem connected to your point, Kate. So you're in a hospital because of some type of pneumonia, you're an elderly person, and the antibiotic isn't working, and you're put on a ventilator, for example. To your point and to your question, one of the things that we know is that there's a shift and the types of organism that begin to grow inside the body that tends to cause infections when it's associated with a ventilator, the use of a ventilator, because humans are incubation systems, essentially, for bacteria. So when our incubation chambers as humans are altered because we have a ventilator, which is absolutely necessary, but at the same time, when those kinds of things are a part of what's going on in the human experience, there's different types of bacteria that we carry naturally that can take advantage of those opportunities, and they tend to be highly drug-resistant bacteria.
Let's go to Nick joining us from De Pere. Nick, good morning.
Hi. Extremely, extremely interesting show. I'm really enjoying this. And I just got a quick question. With society being so advanced, like our science and stuff, why can't we just stop all these anti-resistant drugs? And then one quick question is, are we concerned about like something like the Black Plague coming back?
Nick, you are breaking up a little bit, but I think you're saying we have such an advanced society. Why can't we get rid of bacteria?
Yeah, exactly. And are we concerned about the Black Plague? Is there any concern?
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, the bubonic plague, a lot of what happened in the Middle Ages with the bubonic plague, one of the worst infectious agents that we've ever seen and have ever experienced humans, a lot of that had to do with living conditions that no longer exist. We have a vaccine to that problem. There's antibiotics for that problem, which the individuals living during the time of the Middle Ages in Europe especially did not have access to. So there's no real thought that the plague, there's still small little pockets of outbreaks of plague, surprisingly enough, to this day, but very, very small number of cases because of the things that I've just mentioned. I would, in terms of removing bacteria and getting rid of them, I would just have us all consider for a moment hand washing. Our skin is covered with bacteria. Our bodies are this is all a manner of ways of looking at this. One of the analogies I always liked quite a bit was, if you take a 200-pound adult human, 6 pounds of the 200 represents the bacteria that we carry around. Mm. They're in our large intestines. They're on our skin. They're in a lot of places that cover different parts of the human anatomy. And it's whether it's hand washing or whether using any type of oral care, because, of course, bacteria are in our mouths, too, it's essentially impossible to get rid of them because they have really evolved very impressive ways to colonize our bodies. So there's no thinking. And we really wouldn't want to get rid of them because they help us in terms of digestion. If you look at the gut bacteria, they outcompete generally for disease-causing bacteria because they've already colonized our bodies. But when we become ill or we become compromised, these very bacteria that tend to help us that we carry, they can actually be the cause of infections.
Brian, you have a lot of undergraduate researchers gathering in Green Bay tomorrow to talk about antibiotics, to show off presentations. What's the goal there?
The goal there, I think that there's a couple things. So maybe two right off the top. One, it's to present the research that they've been doing over a 14-week period, starting with the isolation of samples of soil that are rich in terms of diversity and numbers of likely bacteria that are producing antibiotics. And essentially what they've done over the past 14 weeks, all of these students that will be attending, and there's over 110 researchers that will be at Lambeau this Friday to showcase their work. But over that course of that period of time, as researchers, this is an authentic research experience that's designed to mitigate this world crisis of antibiotic resistance and finding new novel antibiotics, hopefully, which the world desperately needs. So, number one, it gives them an opportunity to present their research, but I would also say it's a celebration of some of the good things that can happen when we work together to address very complex and large problems, which, of course, this is for the common good.
So what does soil have to do with it very quickly?
One of the things that we know about the soil is that it's rich in bacteria that produce antibiotics because the way that these organisms carve out their niche essentially in these soil environments, part of the strategy that they've evolved to do just that is to outcompete neighboring bacteria and other microbes by producing antibiotics.
So what are researchers hoping the solutions to this antibiotic crisis will be? Is it to just develop new antibiotics, or is there something more here?
Oh, that's great. Great question, and I appreciate the chance to answer that because this is really important. This is about antibiotic discovery, Tiny Earth, number one. It's in right now, 15 countries, college campuses, even high schools are now doing this. 15 countries, 44 states in the United States are doing this. And so it's a crowdsourcing effort, right? Specifically student sourcing. Hopefully getting students excited about science, which we desperately need. So number one, the way I think about this is that these students are directly involved because of the science and research that they're doing all over the world and trying to mitigate a world crisis, but at the same time, we're also giving them a chance to showcase what science can really do.
Brian, I'm going to hop in right there. Thank you so much for joining us. Brian Merkel, Associate Professor of Human Biology at UW Green Bay. Tiny Earth in Titletown this Friday, December 7th at Lambeau, beginning at 5 o'clock. Public is invited to view Tiny Earth students' research, discoveries, and more. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.